And right now it is time for Tim Luke and Greg Strom, the appraisal guys, the frickin' frack of Nick and Knack with Appraise This. You'll find them on the web at tqag.com. And I do believe we only have Greg on the line. Greg, is it just you today?
That's right. I'm flying solo today.
Uh-oh, flying solo.
Tim is actually in Indiana, Bloomington, Indiana, on the campus of IU. For the NAA, they have a program called CAI, which is Certified Appraisal Institute. And since we've been members of that organization for a number of years now, he's really gone whole hog on this. He's got almost every designation you can have. He's taught for them. He's still teaching for them. And every year at this time, they have a week of the CAI program. And they have, it's a 3-year program. And each year he teaches the advanced class down to the beginners. And so it just so happens that this class starts at 7:30 in the morning, which is an ungodly hour to start a class. It's like being back in college. He'll be back late tonight or tomorrow morning. And it's a great class, and they learn all about marketing. They learn about how to get your business started. They learn technique for doing appraisals, and so it's a great plan or great course. So, and I think this is probably his, I want to say maybe 9th or 10th year of doing this. So, it's been a great, great class for him. He's very good at it. As a matter of fact, well, one of the years he won an award for, well, I don't think it was the most likely to succeed, but because you can never say Tim is not an overachiever. It was Pat Master award for helping, and it's a very prestigious award, and so. He's really committed, and he's very good at it, and he's squeezed this in between his time at Hindman now, which is taking up a tremendous amount of time and travel. He's this entire month he's gone every single week for like 3 days a week, so it's quite a commitment, but he's committed. Or should be committed. I'm not really sure which.
He's committed, should be committed, or will be committed. One of the there's lots of different committal options there. well, I guess we can talk about this. And when if you ever want to think about something that's a home run in advance, and that's a winner in advance, coming up in May is an auction. That auction includes a portrait of actress Marilyn Monroe. That itself alone will bring big dollars, but the portrait is by Andy Warhol, and the estimated value is $200 million, and if they get that, it would set a record. It's called Shot Sage Blue Marilyn, and everybody's saying that it could be the most expensive 20th century painting ever sold at auction.
Well, people would recognize this if they see it.
Yeah.
It's probably one of the most iconic images that he did create, and it's in different colors. But this one is, let's see. The background, as I recall, is blue, and she has a pink face,
and she's got blue eyeshadow on the top. Yeah,
no, yeah, yeah, and that is. I think that's probably his quintessential piece of art pop art. He loved to have images of famous people, and who more famous than Marilyn Monroe. And there are a number of reproductions that are available, which I'm not saying that as a derogatory thing as far as reproductions, but you know, when you're going to, if this thing sells for $200 million, I can pretty much guarantee that you or I are not going to be bidding on it. So, but they are available, and they are, the entire series is available in a much more affordable reproductions if you're looking to have one. But this is going to be really, it could be a historic moment for the Monroe series.
I
don't remember offhand how many there were in the series, but this and also Elizabeth Taylor and even Mao Zedong, those are probably three of the, and Queen Elizabeth, those are really in the top level of this type of a series. But the Marilyn is going to definitely be a historic moment, I think, in the art world for pop art.
Well, when I went on to read about it, he used in this particular case a way of doing it which he never used before, because it was so technical and just a hard thing to do. He used a screening technique to do this, and his quote was, "It was way too complicated and way too involved," and he never used that technique again. But I'm looking at the picture of it here, and you instantly look at it and you know it's a Warhol, and you instantly look at it and you know, like I said, there's very few things in life that are guaranteed, but you know that's a guarantee.
Yeah. You know, even if it sells for $100 million.
Oh, that's right.
Hello. So I don't know whether you would consider that to be underperforming or not, but $100 million for a Warhol, I don't think that's ever been done.
No.
So
it's crazy. It I mean, really, yeah.
So, you know, the other thing about these, we were in, where were we? Oh, we were in, outside of Washington, D.C. We were doing a fundraising event, and we went to somebody's home, and we walk in, and there's a series of four of these originals. It was, in fact, we did get a picture of Tim standing in front of them, and it was almost a religious experience, if I dare say that. But there's something about this technique that he did that was really exciting. Just that there's something very exciting about the outcome. And this, I think it was done probably in the mid-60s. And the they have, it's been, this particular image has been in museums around the world. So, I mean, there is a great provenance to it as well. So, and as you know, that's part of the allure, is that who had it, where it was exhibited, and who is going to end up having it. The only thing is, just hope that it doesn't end up going someplace where we never see it, where it never sees the light of day again. That's my only concern about these high level pieces of art, is that they get squirreled away and only a handful of people ever get to see them again.
All right. Now, my next story is a story that we all dream about one way or another. And it goes back 20 years. There was a garden statuary auction in England, okay? Mm-hmm. And one of the pieces that was purchased for $7,500 was a sculpture that was just stained, darkened, weathered, looked terrible. Well, they restored it to its original finish, and it turned out to be the work of a Italian master artist, Antonio Canova. It's now set to be sold at Christie's in London for about $10.5 million. It was purchased a long time ago, and it's been languishing, and finally it's been fixed up. But that's the type of story that keeps common people, normal people like me, so interested in what goes on in these auctions, because it really is an amazing story. That, first of all, the statue survived that long because it wasn't taken care of, and that after it was purchased, someone took the time to research and do the right things to it, and now it's turned out to be worth $10 million.
Well, he was very prolific. He was in the he was an 18th century sculptor, but some people wouldn't really recognize the artist as much as they would his work, and this happens quite a lot. The fact that somebody saw something in this piece that, like, this warrants a little bit more research.
Yeah, and they went out and hired an art advisor. They were very smart. They were just going to put it in their garden, but they hired actually somebody to research it.
Well, you know, that is something also that, you know, this piece, it could have gone either way, because a lot of times people find these things and they think, oh, this is really nothing, and look how and what condition it's in, and it's just another old Italian sculpture. And the fact that somebody had the foresight to really delve into it is remarkable in and of itself. And the fact that it's going to be sold and it's in its restored condition, it's going to have another entire lifetime, and hopefully people there again will have the opportunity to view this and really enjoy the artistry, and because his sculptures were remarkably accurate and just very beautiful and fluid, and I would like to see it sell for a lot as well. And you know, you talk about this being all, you know, kind of grungy, and you know, people didn't really know what it was and were not really willing to give it a second chance except for this one person. We Boys and Girls Club here in Hobe Sound, they have a lot of generous donors from Jupiter Island, and there was a family or a lady who lived on Jupiter Island and had she had these sculptures that literally they didn't know anything about it, and it kind of looked like, I'm not exaggerating, it looked like a muffler. And they decided, or she decided, to leave it to the Boys and Girls Club. And it turns out, they pulled it out of the ground, still had the clump of dirt on the base, took it to the Boys and Girls Club, and fortunately, the director of the Boys and Girls Club thought, you know what, if she had it, this must be worth something. And so she contacted us to do the research on it, and it turns out that it was by an Israeli artist in the 70s, who created kind of abstract looking things. And we ended up, after the research, we consigned it and it sold in Dubai, and it ended up selling for $352,000.
Amazing.
So, you know, these things, these are the needle in the haystack things, and hopefully this piece that's coming up, it will sort of be in the same ilk, and I will have to follow that sale, because it's a once in a lifetime thing to find this and not have it destroyed just because it was dirty or nobody took the time to research it. So, and we talk about research all the time and verifying, because that's part of what the value of something is. I mean, it's very important to be able to identify something, as either valuable or no, this is a replica of something, so that a value can be placed on it for us as appraisers. So this is kind of an exciting find, and I hope it really does well.
All right, now we're going to go to art that sometimes stretches my mind a little too much. The first ever surrealist sale in Paris by Sotheby's. The sale itself netted $36 million, which is great, but it was highlight really one picture, one painting really brought that number up, and that was a 1929 picture that sold for $10.9 million.
Was that just recently? I think I must have received an email and I just skimmed over. I didn't really look at it.
It was held on March 16th. The painting bought in $10.7 million, which is pretty cool. And I look at it now, and it's a painting that it was done by Francis Picavia, and it was done in 1929. And I'm not a big surrealist fan, but actually this picture that I see is kind of cool. It's kind of cool. Lots of different colors, lots of different shapes, and almost kind of like dreamlike.
Oh, yeah. I do. You know what? I do see that here. Is it Francis Picabia?
Yeah. Yep.
Yes. Oh, yeah. It's almost Mark Chagall. It's very Chagallish, if that's a word. It does kind of remind you a little bit of Mark Chagall, but it's a little bit more detailed than a Chagall. It's actually kind of lovely, and I'm not much of a surrealist.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm not a big surrealist fan, but actually, it is a pretty cool picture. It's almost like you can close your eyes, and it's like a dream sequence to me.
Yeah. I'm going to have to read up, because I would like to see what the provenance of this is. I just found it here. Yeah, it does have the provenance. It goes back to, it goes back to like 1929. I think that's more than likely the first owner. So that it's probably from about 1929 or 1930. So it's actually, I have to be honest with you, it besides being too large for our house, it's actually a very attractive painting for something that's surreal. Because, you know, surrealism, you either love it or you hate it.
Yeah.
There's no in between. And this piece is kind of a delight to look at, just because of, I think, the color and the, I don't even try to understand it, but it's a very, it's kind of a happy painting,
about art in general is that you don't have to understand it. Your eyes and your emotion tell you whether you like it or not. And that's the terrific thing about art that a lot of people don't get. They see something that an artist does and they say, well, geez, that's nothing. How can anybody, how can somebody pay something? Well, it's because if somebody, an artist, creates something that moves you emotionally, that's the whole great thing about art.
Well, you have to also think about Picasso. We have to bring him up because we were at the Picasso exhibit in New York, and this was several years back, and it was extremely exciting to see all of these original Picassos. And there was a lady standing next to us. We weren't communicating with her or anything, but she was just admiring and looking with a friend of hers, and her friend said to her, "I just don't get it." but you're right. Art is something. It's a very, it's very subjective to the person who is viewing it, because one person can see something completely different. And it depends on your mood when you see something. It depends on what the artist is trying to portray. And when an artist, I believe, when an artist is creating something, he doesn't really care what other people are going to think, because he's putting his feelings, his idea, and his thoughts on canvas. So it's not really, art is a very subjective thing.
Yeah, and what's great about art is that when you get somebody like Picasso or any other terrific artist, that's a prolific artist as well, okay, is that their body of work seems to carry through from one piece to another piece to another piece. So it's more than when you talk about somebody like Picasso or any of the top, like I said, prolific, terrific, great artists. It's the body of their work that also ties into it.
Yes, yeah, that's a very important point. I like to, this is why I really encourage people to go to museums to see, even if they just pick out one artist to look at and study for a while. If you know what the artist has done in the past and you see his various works, let's take Van Gogh, for example. You can pretty much, even a novice, if they see a Van Gogh painting in the style and the colors and the brush strokes, if you had 10 paintings in the room and only two of them or three of them were Van Gogh and the others were another artist from that period, I pretty much guarantee that you would be able to pick them out, because you've seen several or more, you know, several of them at other exhibitions or something, and you can pick out, you know what, that looks like a Van Gogh. Right. Let me just do a little more research. And it turns out that there are things that in each painting that an artist does are similar to things that he's done in the past, like certain techniques, certain color combinations, certain forms. These are things that you eventually begin to recognize when you go to an exhibition of any particular artist. So this, or go to the museum. So this is exactly a perfect advertisement for museums, because if you go to look at an exhibition, even if you don't care for it, but you learn to see and recognize these particular styles or these particular pieces of information that are in mostly all of their work. And it's this, you know, it's the same thing with music. You can hear a certain phrase of music that, gee, you know what, that sounds like Beethoven. And
sorry, could you say that again? Oh. My apologies.
That was Siri wants to get in this conversation.
Well, tell Siri to shut the hell up.
Don't even get me started, because I hate that woman. She's always butting in.
Well, speaking about butting in, I have to butt in because we are actually out of time. But it was kind of interesting to take a look at the three or four different pieces that we looked at and what it means to not only the auction world, but to the individual person that looks at all these things.
Yeah, well, my hope is that people from just listening to this would just Google this artist and just take a look and go through the Google images just to see and compare one work to another. I like to do that as well, because you have to, you know, you're only you just have to do the research, and research is like the biggest thing, I think, for people to really learn how to, and you can learn how to appreciate a particular artist or a particular style of art, but it takes research. And I just would recommend highly that somebody who's interested just do the research, and you'll just be amazed at how much it will increase your knowledge of art in general. And you'll be able to compare artists, be able to compare periods, you'll be able to mediums, things like that. So I really encourage people to do the research.
All right. Well, we're out of time. Give our best to Tim. We'll speak to him next week, and have a great week, Greg.
Okay. Thank God. I have to be reintroduced to him after, you know, this past month he's been traveling almost every day. So,
all right, we'll speak to you next week.
Have a great week.
Take care. Greg Strom, one of the appraisal guys, a frickin' frack of Nick and Knack with Appraise This here on The Breakfast Club on Robinhood Radio.